Hello, everyone. This is Frank Shines.
And this is Granison Shines.
Hello, Granison. How are you?
Awesome, man. How are you?
Very good. It's early afternoon, January 10th on the East Coast here. January 10th, 2021, 4 days ago, January 6th, a day, I guess another day that will live in infamy, go down in infamy. So the topic for today is lead in capital insurrection, but left out truth and healing. We'll obviously go into the news first, but kind of generally, how are things going back there in Arizona, and kind of what's been comments, things you've heard from people, how are they looking at it out there on the West Coast about this whole mob attack on the Capitol?
Yeah, absolutely. We always have friends that are on both sides of the equation, right? And so you hear the voice of one side, and voice seems to be rational, and you hear the voice of the other side that seems to be on the irrational side, at least from my perspective and what I'm hearing over here. But it's definitely something that has been the talk, not only talk of the town, it's been talk on the news, it's been talk every time we have a conversation. Let's say we, friends and I, this comes up. And fortunately, I also have some friends who are very much so pro-Trump at the time, but now they are looking at this as something that should have never, ever happened. And all along, they said they started to wean off of his information rhetoric. And now that it's come to this, what we saw here on the 6th, very, very disappointed. I believe that for the most part, I know most of my friends are not as cool with this happening as some of the other ones are. So it's all over the board, but definitely, Frank, it's something that will go down in the history books, like you were saying. First in our lifetime.
Yeah, so how about the daughters? How about your close family? Have you talked with them at all about it?
Yeah, some of the older ones who are more concerned about it, because you know they're the ones who are in their 20s and they're out there. And they were just saying, wow, this is something that is very, I mean, we had to have a talk about how extensive it is in terms of from our political understanding, and we have a deeper, or at least I have a deeper political understanding than they do. So it's been conversations that have been very interesting with the girls. So it's still, okay. Yeah, we're still conversing on it. How about you with your friends and family over there?
Yeah, it's been something. So obviously with Rachel and Michelle, with my wife and daughter of 11 year old going on 30. From day one at age 7, you know, her and her friends, they've got a pretty tight troop, you know, from the gymnastics and everything. So they talk about a lot of topics. They're always in the gym together. So they hear and know about everything that's happening online, and they actually have some very intelligent conversations. So at a very early age, she came to us and told us she didn't like Trump, or, you know, at 7 years old. It's not changed over that time. Right. I'd ask her if she'd heard about some stuff in the news, what happened. She goes, oh, you have stuff out in the Capitol building. I go, yeah. She goes, yes. And so she says, yeah, it's a pretty bad situation. And, you know, it's not good, and how they hurt people and attack kind of the democracy or democracy. So she kind of understands it from that perspective. They're in social studies courses that they're doing right now. So they're kind of talking about some of these things. She had to do a report a few weeks back that kind of tied into some of the history around democracy. So kind of a timely topic for her. One of our far right friends, one that we actually went golfing with, me and my dad went out golfing with a couple of weeks ago during the holidays, and Asian guy too. I sent him a note when I saw this come up, and I'll tell you some more information here in just a moment, but I texted him when it happened. I said, you know, something along the lines of, you know, this is really a sad day for America or whatever. And here they are, they're burning it down. Burning down, you know, the Capitol. Mm-hmm. And his response was, yeah, burn it down and let China repair it.
Oh, really? Wow.
Build it. Build it. Yeah. Pretty, listen, if I was in the military still, you know, I'm not sure, you know, friend or no friend. I'm not sure how I would have reacted. Probably actually would have had probably a bit of an obligation to make his name known in case they want to follow him closer. But
wow.
But yeah, got a very good close friend. You know, as soon as it happened, I pinged him and he told me, yeah, he just heard the shots. He heard the sirens. He's right there at the time, real time. So can't go into any details on it, but just to give you a sense of how close, you know, some of the military folks that are working in government and everything, friends of mine that are
wow.
on this thing. And one very good friend who's right there in the area, just outside in Virginia, you know, her response was very, very strong and poignant regarding the whole history of this. And she sent me back about a 5-line quote from George Washington warning about this type of a thing. So,
wow.
Yeah. So that's how it's been playing with the family. Let's switch gears. We're going to come back to this topic and talk about it in much greater detail. For those of you who are not on the podcast and not watching this on video, the opening screen that we have here shows the iconic shot. And I think this will be one of those iconic shots, just like, you know, crossing the Delaware and the Revolutionary War and the Civil War, you know, iconic pictures. This will go down as an iconic picture, folks. Not since the War of 1812, 2 years later in 1814, right? So over 200 years ago, we had an attack on the Capitol building, and that was by the British. This time it was by Americans.
Yes. I was about to interject too. Yeah, that was by the British, but now this is homegrown right here, man.
Yep. And so it shows gentlemen in the Capitol building, one of the mob attackers with the Confederate flag.
Confederate flag, yes.
That is where we have devolved to. Okay, so in the news, heard about the Georgia stuff. Warnock and Ossoff, just up the road from us. We just flew up there for the big gymnastics meet up in Atlanta for my daughter. Went well, too. She did a great job. So we're really, really proud of her. She's right on track to being, you know, nationally ranked again. So we're happy. It was just a strange environment, too, by the way. They did a great job setting things up, but the social distancing, the way they had two and three chairs, you know, groups of two and three chair clusters spread out all over the gym, forced everybody away, had partitions between the different levels of level 10, which is like the collegiate pre, you know, Olympics level. They were competing on one side, and Rachel, who's level 8 at age 11, they were competing on the other side. Everyone was just so disciplined with their mask, with their social distancing with care, with cleanliness and hygiene and everything. It was very, very impressive. So really proud of the girls. They did a great job. And Rachel led them off and finished up strong at the end, the last routine. She placed fourth. She'd been injured, so she couldn't do all of her routines, but she still placed fourth out of 88 girls. So not bad.
That's awesome. That's still good. Yeah, that's fantastic, even to be recovering from the injury. Wow.
Yeah.
Great for her. Proud of her.
Okay, so as a result, we were up there in Georgia, and we were kind of wondering whether or not we should go there, depending on what might happen with the Georgia election, and whether or not we might have riots and things like that. You know, the mob attack, we were wondering this, just because the nature of the country is just, we're on pins and needles, it seems. So I guess you heard about what happened with Warnock and Ossoff, huh?
Yeah, absolutely, which is great, man. It puts a smile on the face, man. It seems like there's progression in one area and then it's like recession in another area. It's fantastic that we have a Jew and a Black man that have won Senate seats in Georgia. So this is definitely iconic as well. So definitely smiles on that side of the equation. And, you know, some frowns on the other side via the picture that we started this off with. So progress and regress.
Said, right, yeah. steps forward, steps backward. That was something. We talked about it last week. And right. You know, my perception was that it was the Republicans to lose. And then all of the comments and things leading up to this, you know, the comments from Trump leading up to this, that really set off some folks. He came out made some very strong comments about, you know, the rigged election in Georgia, which they did find when they looked in some of the rural counties. Uh-huh. Typically would see in the previous, during the previous election, presidential election right there in Georgia, they saw 15-20% more turnout. This time people dropped off the turnout in key sections by 15-20%. And then African-Americans just came out in droves. Warnock and Ossoff,
yeah,
both senators, gives the balance of power to the Democrats in both houses, Congress, senators, as well as now the presidency. Right. So over the course of the last 4 years, Trump has given up the House, the Senate, and now the presidency.
Yeah.
The other bit of news, whether or not this would have to be led and agreed to by Pence, pursue the 25th Amendment and articles of impeachment for a second impeachment of Donald Trump are already in the works, and they expect to have a vote on that. I'm sorry, present those articles tomorrow, Monday.
Right. So I think from invoking the 25th Amendment, definitely Pence is going to, I don't know if he is going let me back a little bit. I'm glad he was strong on holding his ground, holding his feet to the fire, on doing the right thing and announcing that Biden won, right? So Trump was really pressuring him, even pressuring him through conferences, news conferences, trying to get him to not make
Yes, in the announcement.
Yeah.
On Wednesday morning.
Yeah, exactly. Trump was really pressuring him and putting it out there on his press conference and everything else and his rallies that he would hope Pence wouldn't. But I'm glad Pence stood his ground.
Right.
And if he does decide to finally decide to invoke the 25th Amendment, good for him. I think even though we're this late in the game, still, I mean, it's something that, you know, it's the right thing to, I think it's the right thing to do. The second impeachment of Trump, going down to history as being the first president to be impeached twice, right? Or try to be impeached twice. I think this one has a much stronger stance of going through and not being acquitted this time, but getting actually impeached, and then therefore come 2024, he cannot run.
Right.
At all. Yeah. So I think that should definitely happen. Just my opinion, but I think it should happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, what's been surprising, yeah, on the 25th thing is that, you know, it first was brought out and Pence, those around Pence and, you know, the news and so forth was that he would not do it. And Pelosi came out and challenged him to evoke the 25th. Otherwise, they would proceed with the drafting of articles of impeachment. And within whatever, I guess maybe it was a 2 days or so time frame, she didn't get that response. Then they moved forward with the articles for the second impeachment.
Sure.
Since that time, this morning, apparently there's been conversation here on the East Coast that Pence, not only was his life endangered, and not only were there tapes of, you know, the insurrectionists saying that, you know, chanting, you know, give me Mike Pence, right? They were talking about they wanted Mike Pence.
Right.
But not only was his life endangered, but his daughter and his wife were also present. So their lives were at risk. Yeah. So because of that, apparently, and everyone's been saying that, you know, Pence is just, you know, just easygoing, most easygoing person you can imagine, just doesn't get angered about anything. But for the first time, those around him are saying this is not the same. So whether or not he will ultimately file for the, you know, and work together with the cabinet to invoke the 25th Amendment remains to be seen. But clearly the House is moving forward with the second impeachment. And I think both are necessary. And I think both of this cannot stand. You cannot have the equivalent of a domestic terrorism in your country on the Capitol and not respond.
Yeah. Right. True.
Senators, congressmen, they got to be held accountable. Yep. They've got to be called to vote, roll call, one way or the other. You against this? Are you for this? Let your name go down in history forever. This also sends a very strong signal across generations to come.
Right.
The next Trump is not going to be as cumbersome and ill-witted as Trump may have been. But imagine if they have the same underlying, you know, sensibilities for power and control and authoritarianism. A smarter Trump could have pulled this thing off.
Yeah, that's true. I hope that in the future we can see those signs and those red flags and not even allow someone to be a nominee. We all knew Trump before he got into office, knew that he was pretty much narcissistic, knew that he had a power trip. But the GOP, of course, still elected him as the their front runner, their elect, and here we are. So I'm not surprised that it has gone to, I'm surprised, but not. I mean, when you look at Trump and his history and even in the business arena, he's done some things that were just very, you kind of take a step back and like, ooh, you know?
Right.
So it's not a surprising moment that we are here, but at the same time, I'm definitely surprised. So it's on both sides of the equation again, but I'm not, it doesn't come with any, I mean, it's just, Frank, I tell you, it's hard to talk about it at times, but.
Yeah, definitely. You know, you can say, yeah, maybe people are just shocked, stunned, but no one should be surprised. It hasn't been, there's absolutely nothing that happened here that you couldn't see coming a mile away.
Sure, right? Exactly.
So many early warning signs and very strong positive, negative comments, whether.
Right. You know, but just surprised that, wow, we let it get there. That's the surprising part. We let it get there. Sure. We let it get there. Not surprised that sums it up. Not surprised that you can see it's coming from Trump, but I'm surprised that we let it get there.
Right.
So,
crazy. General Milley. The chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, at the helm, got debriefed on the possibility of Trump causing more damage and his access to the nuclear codes and was reassured. And this is something, in the military, we're all trained as officers. You know, you do not follow an unlawful order, even if it comes from the president of the United States.
Right.
General Milley reassured Speaker Nancy Pelosi of the House that, you know, we do not just allow a president to move forward with a nuclear attack unless, you know, there's a moral and ethical reason, there's a legal reason, and it has to be proportional. You can't ever attack without some sort of proportional threat. And so not likely that, anyone needs to be fearful that the military will obey any unlawful orders from the president.
Yeah, she was on that one pretty quick. She was on it. She's like, hey, let me go ahead and call her. General Milley and see what's going on here. She was on it quick. Good for her on that one.
Do that. Yeah. Reassured the nation, reassured a lot of people. The big tech stuff around this, right? So Twitter banned Trump. Parler, which is a right wing alt app that's used. It's kind of like a Twitter for the right wing, I guess you could say. A lot of chatter that was found on that leading up to the mob attack, which is another reason why we should not be surprised by the domestic terrorist insurrectionists that hit the Capitol building, because there was all sorts of chatter well before. There was the planning and all the comments from Trump and his family, from others. So there was absolutely no surprise. It was all over the media, social media. It was all over the traditional media and the news, right, and so forth. So no big surprise about the fact that this was being planned. Question, what are your thoughts about these recent developments with Parler and with Twitter?
Well, it definitely needs to happen as far as silencing him some way. I'm not a user of Parler, and I know that Google banned them a while ago, and I think Apple was kind of monitoring them, the last thing I heard. So it seems like they've removed them, but they were definitely monitoring the Parler app to see if they would continue the rhetoric. And this is even before everything jumped off on the 6th. But as far as Twitter ban, yeah, he needs to be silenced there for sure. And then also with Facebook, they're saying, hey, we're banning him until he's out of office, which is good. They're saying possibly even until after he's out of office. And there's a lot of supporters on both of those mediums as well. So good for them standing up. I'm glad they did. And I think it would have been a travesty if they did not, as much as they have been. Well, I figure they would, because they have been so much in the news about making sure that the information and not spreading fake news and not inciting violence and whatnot, that they had to step up. I think they felt compelled to step up, which is good. Glad they did. They did the right thing.
Yeah, I agree. The fact that, yeah, they bound his account. I mean, it's not like a temporary thing, just a permanent thing. They're removing his account completely. Twitter is with Trump. So that's sends a very, very strong message to not just President Trump, but for anyone on the on Twitter or potentially other social media. I think they're going to be forced to move in this direction, closer to where way Twitter has moved. So the other this is an ad I saw on one of the news channels, and they were talking about, you know, LeBron James' strong comments against this mob attack, and there was about a 30-second spot. I haven't been able to find this video, but essentially what it does, it kind of goes through the history of America. You know, let's maybe back up one point, right? One thing that I heard so often from Obama, who, you know, I greatly respect in many ways, but one of the things that he often would say that I just always kind of cringed at, his statement, this isn't who we are.
Right.
This is not who we are. Yeah. This is who we are, right? This is who we are. This insurrection, this violent mob mentality, the myth of American innocence is exactly that. It's just a myth, right? Americans have been harming folks, right? I mean, from the very beginning, it took over the land, 90% of Native Americans wiped out.
Yep.
Right? They claim that, well, we just didn't know, we don't understand, you know, epidemics, and well, you could give them maybe a little bit there, but look where we are here today. They don't mind again wiping out huge communities of people with another pandemic and epidemic. And so you can't believe that we don't have this long history, whether it's fighting bloody battles to defend ourselves or fighting a civil war where literally, you know, same family members were killing each other to the tune of 500,000 dead, right?
Right.
We are a bloody, challenging, difficult country with all the warts and all the beauty marks that kind of make us uniquely American. But the reason I bring this up is because what LeBron talks about in this Capitol Mob advertisement, this video ad, is kind of that whole history. You know, it is who we are. There's lots of signs, there's lots of examples when you look at the history of this country of these sorts of things. And so he then kind of comes back to present day and makes you know, the point that, well, what happened during the George Floyd protests? And look how quickly, you know, the police officers, even the National Guard, as they call it, their own little militia, whatever you may want to call it. But the way that those individuals were attacked with tear gas, with rubber bullets, were roughed up, were handcuffed, or thrown in jail. And then we have an incident like this where people invade, take over first of all, interrupt a Democratic election to prevent it from moving forward. So that's an overthrow. That's a definition of a coup. You read everything in a constitution and you hear insurrection, this is a definition of an insurrection.
Right.
And they put at risk the House, senators, all of the family members that are in attendance at this event, all of the police officers, to include one police officer who, I believe there's now two police officers who died. So bringing the total is five, but they just announced the fact that there's another police officer who, I believe they're just releasing his name. So all these people that were put at risk, five of which died, they take over the Capitol building. They ransack. We have the pictures here. You can see the ransacking of the furniture and everything, smashing the windows and violating, you know, the sacred halls of Congress, and the standoff with the armed guards, you know, at the ready. And we have a picture of that. The fact that you've got senators that are being forced and escorted out down through the basement. Others are holed up in their, you know, in their little small conference rooms or offices, right? As the mobsters are banging on the windows and banging on the doors trying to get in. So, yeah, so that's kind of what his ad talks about. It talks about the fact that, you know, there's two Americas here. One that allows, with a wink and a nod, people to walk right into our Capitol, take selfies with those who are invading, open doors for those who are coming into the Capitol to attack and desecrate the halls of Congress and our Constitution. And then another where peaceful people protest and they're attacked with bullets and tear gas.
Exactly. Exactly. There you go. And further to further that, which I understand what you're saying there with LeBron's ad, friends and I were talking about the same thing. If this were the BLM movement or something else going to the Capitol, it would have been received totally, totally differently.
Right.
And that's that two Americas. There you go. Right there. Right. Yep.
Kathy Wood. So really sharp young lady that we'd recommend everyone that is interested in money and innovation and technology in your career. Check out Kathy Wood. She's just been doing, you know, bang up job with investment firm ARK that she founded. And she's got a really great approach to portfolio management, looking at disruptive technologies and things that we talk about in the book. Primarily around artificial intelligence and the bioengineering or genomics, the convergence of those two. And she has got like one of the top records in the world with her investment results. And she's just came out with her her recent portfolio strategy for the next 5 years with the intent to grow at 15% compounded over 5 years to double her investors' money. So if you get a chance, take a look at Kathy Wood. That's spelled with a C, C-A-T-H-I-E Wood, W-O-O-D of ARK, A-R-K. So just some information there. Have you heard much about her or anything to add?
Just what you said there. That's basically what's been transpiring this as well. She's made some nice little, like you said, bets and predictions on things, some things. So awesome.
Yep.
Awesome.
So this past week, billionaire investor, another investor, and I like his approach. He takes approach based upon, you know, social good investments. But billionaire investor Chamath Palihapitiya, he came out and predicted that the Tesla stock will triple. Well, I guess we should back up, right? Tesla just became the richest man this past week. Stocks change very fast, so we could check again and find out maybe Bezos is back up, you know, by a few billion dollars here or there, who knows. But as of last week, for the first time, Jeff Bezos was not the richest man in America. It was Tesla founder Elon Musk. And the bet is that Musk could become the first trillionaire, according to Chamath. So really interesting insight there. What are your thoughts about that? I know we talked a lot in the book and during some of the podcasts about the electric vehicle market,
right,
where it might be going. And I know you've got you know, some close friends that are out at Tesla. So what are your thoughts about it?
Yeah, he has one. Well, the stock went up, what, 6.9%. That's what helped him surpass Jeff Bezos. But at the same time, he has some very, very, very aggressive, which is a way, if you want to drive a company to do their best in your, I mean, you're squeezing blood out of a turnip. That's the way he would describe it. A friend of mine would describe it when he's working there very close to inside Tesla. And right, they've had their challenges, have some challenges, and they're trying to work through those challenges. But he was trying to get us in there to help do some training with some of the leadership. And there's just, if you have they're too busy, basically. They're too busy. At the same time, they're having people that are, well, the pandemic has affected them, so they had to lay off a bunch of people at one point in time. Now they're hiring those people back, and he's in the process of gathering data and whatnot, and he helps run analytics for the HR department. We're talking, what, four? I think he said like 200 to 400 people a week that they're hiring, and I mean, he's conducting a lot of interviews. It's hectic over there. It's very, very hectic. And so when you have the inside look into what's going on and then what transpires on the outside, what we all see in terms of Elon Musk becoming the first trillionaire, potentially becoming the first trillionaire, yeah, you can see the drive internally within the company. The cogs in the gears and the corporation are spinning so fast over there. That's for sure.
Well, you know, one of the things that Kathy talks about, that again, one of the reasons why we're very interested in her, is her investment advice and her thoughts around career and skills. And she puts a lot of emphasis on education, particularly education of women and younger folks in the investment market, and an understanding of the future of where all this stuff is going, you know, the future of work, and therefore how that's driving a lot of these things.
Mm-hmm.
She talks again, you know, back to Musk. She talks about this whole similar approach, right? Thinking about these new platforms, right? So mm-hmm. Musk has essentially created the equivalent of an AI-powered clean energy platform. That's essentially, right, it's not just an automobile that he's created. He's created a platform that's similar to an operating system like Microsoft that you can plug into and do a lot of other things with, right? All of the AI and all of the computers and the intelligence and everything that's been built and all the driving miles that they've been able to accumulate and feed this algorithm, that infrastructure, you can take and build anything on it that you want to create mobility on, right? It could be used for robotics. It could be used for almost any type of other mobile, whether it's a truck or a train or an airplane. I mean, there's a lot of things that you could potentially do with some of these things. Obviously an airplane is different in terms of being in three dimensions, but a lot of the same intelligence and thinking around how to create energy efficient platforms for the future, right? The battery technology and so forth that they've developed, those are things that you can plug and play, and you could create the equivalent of an operating system. Similarly, right, when you think about the genomics, right? And what's recently happened with the way open source research and development around bioengineering and genetics and messenger RNA, that is what's fueled this massive reduction in the time it takes to develop a vaccine. Normally it might take 10 or 12 or 15 years. We've done it in about 10 months, but it would not have been possible had one, right, China not released to open source online platform, the DNA sequencing, and then everyone working together and collaborating in a way where you were able to accelerate the learning curve across the world. So those are the types of things that she's talking about. Similarly, you know, if we look at, you know, something like a Salesforce.com, they've essentially created a platform for customer relationships and marketing and everything, right, that you can plug into, and you can scale it and grow it on the cloud, right? So it's kind of that, you know, mindset that she's approaching as she looks at this, these opportunities, and Musk just ties right into that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. Good for him.
Okay. The point for the day, discussion for the day, back to what led to the storming of the Capitol, right? So the around the world, right? So this isn't just an American thing. You know, people around the world are looking, right? Probably someone, you know, quipped that, you know, the terrorists over in the Middle East are probably looking at this and saying, boy, you know, next time all we have to do is just walk right in the front door, right? So there's been a lot of unfortunate comments from around the world about what just took place on Wednesday. The Indian Times, they called it the Ku Klux Klan insurrection, right? So this is what we feared, and this is why we wrote this book, Led In But Left Out, Leadership, Faith, and Knowledge in the Age of AI, Coronavirus, and Fake News. We'll right. tell you exactly why we say that, right? So the underlying point we want to make here as we go into this discussion and, you know, kind of banter about some of these points around the concept of led in but left out. And I'm not sure, you know, for those of you who have not gone to the website and seen all the details about the book or read the book, this will probably give you the first overall perspective of the different tenets of the book and what it was really designed to do and warn about. So the number one point here is that we Americans fear and hate each other more than we fear or hate foreign enemies and economic rivals today. Mm-hmm. And that is saying a lot, right?
Yeah.
Once we're at a point where we think each of us are enemies, that's what allows this to really get out of control. It's one thing to say, oh, hey, the Democrats are going to take over your healthcare, and maybe they might not, you know, they may invest too much money over here in something crazy called, you know, climate change and the clean energy. It's something else to say, if we don't stop these Democrats, they will run and destroy our country and your life and everything you know forever. Sure. That's a whole different story, right? Because once you make that claim, then you can have a mob attack on the Capitol. Once you make the claim that everything is lost, and that's exactly what Trump and many of his other cronies were saying, if we don't win this thing, if you guys don't go in there and take over, this will never be the same. This will never, no longer be our country. Now, we all know what's really underlying this. It's demographics. It's the basic physics. Two major physics. The physics of the fact that the demographics by 2040, roughly, will be the minorities will be the majority of America. That is one great fear. And the other is all the turmoil and everything that we just talked about relating to Kathy Wood. And that is the change. Globalization, high tech, artificial intelligence, robots, right? The Chinese, all of these fears, and the fact that people are feeling that in a way that is profound, the fading of the American dream. We're showing a picture here, Brookings Institute, the work done by Raj Chetty and his economists. And Raj Chetty is one of those individuals who's looked to from the right and from the left in terms of his objective clear-headed thinking around economics. During the COVID, he's put together a lot of information to show that the essential workers are still in this recession, but those that are at the top, the elites, have essentially, you know, run right through this recession. In fact, made trillions of dollars during the recession associated with the coronavirus, right? But looking at this over an extended period of time, decades, going back to 1940s, 90% of those kids could expect to make more money than their parents. That's the American dream. That number is now less than 50%. And when you take a number that goes from 90% to less than 50%, that represents all of the working white class, men and women, black, white, brown, whatever, and everybody's feeling that pain, right?
Right.
And right. That is why, you know, at the opening here of this session, we said, did we let in the Capitol insurrection, but leave out truth and healing? And we think truth and healing have to go together, right? On the one hand, you got to hold those accountable. You have to stand for truth. You got to be a leader that tells the truth to the people, give it to them straight, but you've also got to heal those that are being left behind. And that healing is what we're talking about as it relates to this fading American dream. Let me just throw out this one other story here, turn it over to you here, Grandison. I was looking at, what happened when the mobsters attacked the Capitol building, and they overtook the Senate chambers. And Senator Raskin of Maryland was one of those senators who was in the chambers the day that occurred. Now, back up, several days before, his 25-year-old son committed suicide.
Right.
And what his son left behind was a note which read as follows. This is to his parents, 25-year-old, right? From a good family, family of senators. He's got two sisters, a great house, great background, great future, everything going for him.
Right, yeah.
To his parents, to his sisters. Please forgive me. My illness won today. Please look after each other, the animals, and the global poor for me. All my love, Tommy. So what is that saying to you? What are your thoughts about that statement and anything else you want to add to this initial points around what we're talking about here, Grandison? What's your perception? What do you think is being said?
The underlying message to me of what's being said is that there is such despair. And the community for the millennials. There are a lot of challenges. Unfortunately, they haven't been, I feel, my opinion, they haven't been taught the resilience and or given the opportunity to build and live with the and understand the resilience of what it takes in order to live life on a day-to-day level. Despite you having all the money in the world, and that, as we know, does not buy happiness.
Yeah.
And so I feel definitely that you have to start when the children are young. And I feel that we have gotten so complacent in terms of not challenging the emotional stress and or distress of our children and teach them how to muscle through it, teach them how to think through it, teach them how to utilize resources to get through it, that we've come to a point where we see right here with this graph.
Yeah.
We have this graphic that shows the declining or fading American dream. And we know the suicide rates are going up, Frank, right?
Right.
So I could talk about this all day long for lack of for the time that we don't have. It's the despair. And I believe that we, the parents, have failed the children in challenging them to that degree so they can build that strong mental fortitude, have that mental toughness that it takes to get through some of the things that they go through. That's just my opinion. I'm seeing this all over though too, Frank.
Yeah, I am too, unfortunately. I think, in the book, we talk about one of my close friends from the Air Force Academy and her and her husband who lost a 20-year-old. Everything going for him, same thing.
Yeah.
To suicide. Depression, anxiety, stress.
Yep. So my thing is why, and it's a rhetorical question here, but it's like, why have we gotten to this place where we don't want them to compete anymore? We want to give everyone a trophy, right? I mean, that doesn't help the mental toughness that goes along with that. In life, there's winners and losers, point blank.
Big trophies for a little effort, right? I mean, that's it, right? Gold medal or bronze, but I mean, gold, silver, or bronze, but 17th place. Come on up.
Come on up. That's funny. Yes. So
you better clap for them.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. You better clap for them. But Frank, that says a lot about where we are, but also speaks on where we need to go. Where hopefully we as parents can see through this. I mean, we wrote the book about it, of course, so I encourage everyone to get the book. And really start thinking about how to place this into the appropriate areas of our life and talk about AI. Just kind of mention this right quick. There's a movie, Frank, you got to watch. It's called Monsters of Man. It talks about, they have these, it's a thriller movie, but basically these robots who have artificial intelligence start thinking on their own.
Right.
I mean, talk about movies. I always say movies tell the future. Movies tell the future.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No surprise that happens there, but just kind of get back to where we are here. But yeah, that's, it's disheartening, man. It's disheartening.
Right, exactly. And so, so in the book and in this particular chart that we've drafted here, we say the book summary is about this comment: America let in inequality, we left out, but left out upward mobility. We let in anger, but left out empathy. We let in fake news, but left out critical thinking. Let in tech disruption, but left out people transition. We let in virtual, but left out reality. Yeah. We let in college elites, but we left out the working class essentials, right? And then we show a graph also of the decline in our life expectancy. So for, you know, decades and decades, hundreds of years, right? We have seen life expectancy in the United States and around the world increase. And for the first time, you know, we saw 4 years straight of a decrease in the life expectancy of the average American. And this coronavirus is going to take that to a whole other level in terms of that number dropping off.
Absolutely.
And all of those things are pointing to these high suicide rates, the heroin addiction, the substance abuse, the anxiety and depression and stress that we all feel.
Right.
But all of this is part of a bigger change, right? It's like taking the equivalent of moving from the farming or agrarian period into, from the nomadic period into the agrarian farming period. And then moving from that farming period into industrialization, right?
Right.
And then most recently, we've moved in the late 50s and 60s, we moved into the information age as computers started coming on board. Right. And now we're moving into this, what we talk about in the book, we call it potentially, right? The AI, artificial intelligence, inequality economy. If we don't do something about this, this will be the AI inequality economy. And we'll continue to see a precipitous drop off in life expectancy, an increase in these suicide rates that we see. We already talked about in one of our previous podcasts, you know, young ladies, young girls, 10 to 14, suicide rates of them has doubled over the last 10 years, doubled. So this is being exacerbated by social media and technology. Parents that don't understand the technology, kids that are swept up into it. I had a conversation with my daughter on the plane because I noticed a couple of times in the airport, I said something to her and she had her earbuds on and had her head in her iPhone. And I said, head out of the cockpit, right? One of the chapters that we talk about in the book, get your head out of the cockpit, look around. So I explained to her the whole concept of when we fly, we are trained to think about the physiology of how our brains and our eyes work. It's called rods and cones. So the cones are those things that you see right in front of you when you're looking at a cell phone or looking at the instruments on your cockpit dashboard. Mm-hmm. But then you have the rods, which helps you identify movement around the aircraft. We always say, keep your head on the swivel, get your head out of the cockpit.
Right.
You don't see changes. You can't see changes in the world if you don't have your rods working. If your eyes are focused intently on a screen all day long, forever, you lose a sense of reality. And that's what we discuss in this topic, this point around, you know, have we let in virtual but left out reality? We get into a point where we start to go into this downward cycle, downward spiral, perhaps, you know, of not knowing what's real and what's not real. And then it's easy for someone to give you fake news and you read the fake news and you believe, yeah, it's okay for us to go in there and take over Capitol building.
Right. Yeah. You know, Frank, what you said about the rods and cones is tantamount to what we learn in martial arts. We learned that, yes, you can see your opponent right in front of you, but you also have to be aware of those other potential dangers that are in your peripheral vision. So I think we're talking the same language there. And what I have noticed, and maybe you have too, is that you can talk to people and you can see whether or not they have an understanding of that based on how they communicate. You ever notice that? Meaning that their conversation can be more linear versus more expansive.
Yeah, right, that's true.
Yeah, and so you can see that, and this is such a way to, and we were talking about one of our, I was coaching another client, we talk about expanding the thinking. It's one of our modalities, expansive thinking, fifth level of thinking. Right. But you can talk to people, but and still see that they have this total, they can only see what's in front of them. That's the only thing that they understand, the only thing that matters besides the other things that are definitely affecting them around them, or even have the potential to affect them, but they don't see it.
And you know, it reminds me of the concepts we talk about in our marketing classes in graduate school, right? Around market myopia. And how is it that, you know, so many industries go under and they fail to see the competitor coming, sure, right? Sure. They got this market myopia, this tunnel vision, and they're not aware of the other dots that they failed to connect, right? The failure of imagination that was found in the 9/11 report. You know, right. How did they hit us 9/11? How did this go so badly? But yet, if you connected the dots, you could see it all. If you connect the dots, you can see the capital mob going to hit. If you connect the dots, you can see that we're going to lose our middle class if we're not careful. And no democracy will stand without a middle class. And right now, we're eroding that middle class. We are not speaking the truth, and we are not lending them a helping hand. We're doing neither. And this is the price that all of us are paying for that.
This is the price, man. This is the price. Well said.
We wasted another hour or so. We appreciate everyone's time. We thank you for spending a little bit of it with us today. Hopefully you got some valuable information. We'll look forward to talking with you next week.
All right.
Thanks. Frank Shines and
Anderson Shines as well.